to do? Why should doing nothing be difficult? And one of the reasons is because we always want to be entertained, always want to be stimulated, always want to do interesting things, which is one of the reasons why when interesting things or stimulation is not happening, we get bored. And when we get bored, we tend to just turn off our attention, which means that we get sleepy or sometimes even depressed. So one of the most important parts of meditation is to make it interesting. There's all sorts of little techniques to do that. And so when we do like teach meditation retreats, there's one technique I developed and used to use for people is when they're doing the breath meditation, and you're watching the breath go in, watching the breath go out, find out which is the longest, the space when the in-breath finishes and pauses, and you're not started your out-breath yet, the space between the end of the in-breath and beginning of the out-breath, or the space between the end of the out-breath and the beginning of the in-breath, which is longer. And when I do that, then people have got something which interests them, a little task to do. It doesn't really matter at all, but the point is it makes you a little bit more aware and more interested in what to do. But the problem then comes when people answer that, then what do I do to keep them interested? So it's one of the reasons why, you've heard me say this before, one of the most powerful ways of keeping your interest in your meditation is you enjoying it. It's fun. And that's one of the reasons why when I've been teaching the last year or two, I've really encouraged and pushed the perception of joy and happiness, delight in what you're doing. Now why do you go for a walk by the beach? Why do you just go and sit in the garden? Why do you do anything in life? What motivates you? And of course, it's the motivation to get rid of problems in life, you know, to mow the lawn in the garden, to wash the dishes, or to get on the computer and answer all your emails. Have you ever noticed when you answer all the emails, as soon as you answer them all, some new ones come in? It's really unfair, isn't it? The same as you wash your dishes. You wash your dishes, dry them, put them away, and then you use them again. Sometimes I thought, well, I'll just use the same dish again and again and again. People say, no, that's dirty. You can't win. So anyway, this is not about solving problems, because there's always a new problem, it's endless. But instead, we use this, the developing happiness and joy. Appreciating the fun, the happiness, the joy of just sitting here, doing nothing, and just watching this moment. People say, Ajahn Brahm, that's stupid. You're just sitting here doing nothing, that's not fun at all. But after you develop the perception of beauty and delight, it really is fun, you enjoy it. At least I do. So what you usually do is you start with relaxing the body. Relaxing the body is important because, you know, this is something which is so close to you. You can feel the aches and the pains in the body. And also you just know that all these different sicknesses which are around these days, they've always been around, but we know much more about them. And so all these sicknesses which you have, the aches, the pains, the headaches, the tummy aches, the neck aches, why do we always call it about aches or pain? We don't really say much about the delight in the body. And that delight is there when the body feels really relaxed and at peace. You know, sometimes I was just joking just a few minutes ago, we were just talking about the possibility of doing some extra development on Dhammaloka Center. And I asked, what are you going to develop? Put a jacuzzi? If there was a jacuzzi here after the meditation, you can go to the jacuzzi for free. Would you go? Why? You go there because it's supposed to be fun and relaxing. Why isn't meditation more fun, more relaxing? Basically, for me, I don't really know what a jacuzzi is, but I know a hot bath. If I had a choice between a hot bath and meditation, I think honestly I would choose meditation. It's more peaceful, it's more joyful, more fun. It's one of the reasons why that most people would ask to go to the jacuzzi rather than meditation. And sometimes, why? Because once you start to develop the perception of delight in meditation, you find that that delight is real. And it's far more beneficial for your physical health and well-being than even going to a jacuzzi. You find that the body really relaxes amazingly deeply. And it's not just the benefits, which I've spoken about many times, but just the feeling of your body being at peace, and it's relaxed, and it feels good. And I don't mind saying that, you know, I'm almost 70, and, you know, my body hasn't got much sickness at all. And for these people who say I'm overweight, I've told people many, many times, this is not overweight. What happens is, as a monk, some of you heard this before, when you're a monk, you grow in kindness. Every year, you get more loving kindness and more compassion. Basically, your heart gets bigger and bigger every year. And I've been a monk 47 years now. So as your heart gets bigger and bigger. After about 10 years, it got as big as it could get, pushing against my rib cage. So I only had only one more way to go. As it kept on going bigger, it went down and out. This is not fat, this is just a big heart. And you know, there's actually quite a bit of truth in that. It comes because you're a happy monk. But anyway, that's another story. But nevertheless, though even a 70-year-old, I'm pretty healthy and feel really good. Very rarely get any sicknesses or diseases. But it's also because I know how to relax my body and allow it to rest. So it's like you're not using it so much. Even many people, as a kid, sometimes you go to sleep at night, be dreaming all night, or tossing and turning. And when you are sitting down, you're always doing something. But as a monk, you can sit down and do nothing. So your body really relaxes very deeply, goes into a very deep state of stillness. And that is delightful. And I feel it and enjoy it. So I look forward to meditations because I have joy and happiness doing it. Real, not imaginary. And then, of course, you don't want to wander away anywhere. You don't want to think about other things because you're having too good a time right now. And one of the similes I use, before I became a monk, I used to like going to concerts, musical concerts, of classical music. And I became more keen to listen to classical music than the old rock and roll I used to listen to earlier. And I didn't know actually why that was so delightful, listening to classical music, until I realized that when I was listening to a symphony, that I wasn't thinking. The symphonies can be quite long. And all the minutes I was listening to that symphony, hardly a thought was going on in my head. I couldn't plan the future or complain about my past because I didn't have any space in my mind to do that. The mind was totally with the music and the notes being played right in this present moment. Just the enjoyment of the concert blocked out any of those other thoughts. And I notice that's the same with meditation. The enjoyment of the meditation means the other thoughts, they just can't find a space in your mind. because that would take away the joy, and just the mind refuses to do that. It's an automatic keeping out of the thoughts. And then you realize later on, when you looked at how the Buddha taught meditation, there was so much words about developing joy. When the Buddha taught the meditation on the breath, always saying developing delight as the breath goes in, delight as the breath goes out. So they experienced happiness, called it piti sukha. So I like to do that as soon as possible, delight in a relaxed body, and delight in just experiencing peace. And I go straight for peace as soon as my body is relaxed, because that gives me an idea of how my mind is. It's one of those factors of this thing we call a mind, which is one of the most important in meditation. How peaceful are you? I'm not always peaceful, sometimes I've got lots of business to do and lots of things to talk about. But then, when it's meditating time, I just stop and say, you know, how peaceful are you, mind? And I know how to make my mind more peaceful. You don't force it. Look at your mind like a person, not you, but someone separate. Like the two monks here. There's no way I can make these two monks peaceful by just telling them to be peaceful, by ordering. Has anyone told you to sit quietly and don't think? All that does to you is just make you afraid or rebellious. So it's not through control that you become peaceful. It's always through something much more refined and inspiring that you become peaceful. Just look at peace itself and how gorgeous it is. I think you've all had times when you've been very peaceful, I hope. How did it feel? All the best meditations you've ever had, what did they feel like? Would you like it back again? And of course it's delightful, joyful. And this is how you re-experience them. You just go for the joy of peace. And if it's a joy of peace, you find any effort, any negativity, any force, any control, and you lose the delight. It's one of the qualities of wisdom called freedom. And there are two types of freedom which I've often talked about. The freedom of desire, where you can think and plan and want whatever you like. But the much more delightful freedom is the freedom from desire. There's nothing in the whole world you want. It's like your home. Nowhere to go, nowhere you need to go. You're happy right here. It's like the journey of your life has been completed for half an hour or so. So you can just sit here and just enjoy every moment. Nothing to do, nothing to improve, no one asking you to achieve anything more, no one complaining to you, that everything is perfect enough for this short period of time. And that means there's nothing needed to be planned or organized. So we just let things be. We only let things be because we realize they're perfect enough that we can let them be. And when we have that experience, the mind gets very peaceful. We get to know that quality of the mind called peace. And it's very, very, very enjoyable. Once we notice the delight of peace, it's almost like we get addicted to peace. Not really addiction, it's halfway in between just ordinary and just addiction. We just love it. We incline towards it. As a Buddha once said, once a little bit of peace comes in the mind, just the mind leaps towards it. Yeah, it's peace, it's my favorite friend. And you go and enjoy their company. So once we know peace and its delight, we don't need to think about anything. We don't want to think about anything. The mind doesn't want to wander anywhere. The reason is because it's got something much better. So this is actually how we learn to be peaceful, not through force. Every time we hold something, we disturb it. We create those thoughts and that wandering mind. We only wander because we're not happy where we are. I've been in Perth 37 years now, Bodhidharma Monastery, all that time. I don't go anywhere else because I'm happy where I am. I was cleaning out my an old file. I think I've got the piece of paper here. Where's my bag? I'll stop in a moment. I was messing around with our new president yesterday at a meeting, and I found out this old piece of paper, but I hid the date. I still got it hidden here. Had an official letter over here from the Los Angeles Buddhist Vihara, and it says, it's all signed here by the trustees. We, the trustees of the Los Angeles Buddhist Vihara, very humbly and respectfully request you to assist us in reorganizing our temple in Los Angeles Buddhist Dharma Society. We need your guidance and advice in the following areas. We would like to extend an invitation for you to be our spiritual leader. And I showed this to our president, and he thought, oh my goodness, we're losing Ajahn Brahm. And I took off the little piece of paper here. November the 29th, 2005. That's 16 years ago, you're safe. I'm not going anywhere. But it's not as if I don't need to go somewhere else. It's just I don't want to, because you're enjoying this place. You have happiness, fun, joy. So why go anywhere? So when I'm meditating, I feel peace in my mind. Feel the breath being peaceful. You know, often you get nimittas and it's obvious that you don't want to go anywhere. All those beautiful things means I don't want to go anywhere. The mind is satisfied and content, which means you stay here. Imagine what that's like, just being in one place, not because you're imprisoned, not because you've got nowhere else to go, because you're happy to be here. When you're happy to be here, that's the end of the wandering mind. It doesn't want to go anywhere. It's content and satisfied where it already is. So the more you develop that sense of contentment, satisfaction, delight in every stage of the meditation, then wandering mind just doesn't exist for you. Imagine that, just sitting down, and you're just peaceful, just being here. Oh, what joy. You know, for those of you who don't know this term, there's actually a term for that in Pali, and they call it aho sukhang. Sometimes use that word from the monks, aho sukhang. Oh, what joy. So if you have a good meditation, that's what you can say. You come out, forget about the sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Aho sukhang. Oh, what joy. Can you say that? Aho sukhang. Okay, anyway, enough of that. Let's get to do some meditation. So, you want to sit down in your meditation posture the best you possibly can. Oh, by the way, this is the ongoing class, the introduction class that's in the room in the community hall, just next door. Here we go. Prepare for joy. So you sit down and close your eyes. And one of the main reasons for closing your eyes is because you don't get disturbed by visual phenomena. You don't get disturbed just by people coming and going, or the monks falling asleep, or I might get in trouble for that later. It makes them laugh though. Must be some truth to it. And I can't see any of you. Not that I don't like you, but sometimes it's nice when everything disappears. Close your eyes and then I begin by just checking my posture, which the cushion under my butt needs to be adjusted, so please excuse me for a moment. And then I begin by generating some delight in my legs by relaxing them. I just check the feet first of all. Making sure the knees are bended just the right amount. There's not too much pressure anywhere. This is the time for fidgeting. Oh, that's really good. Oh, yeah. Because these legs have to keep this position for about 40 minutes. Got to make sure that they are really comfortable. And I'm mindful, aware of the feelings in my legs. One way of doing that is just asking the simple question, legs, how are you? It's an act of kindness and respect, not to assume that the legs are content down there, but just to ask. Once I feel that the legs are relaxed, and I still keep my awareness on my legs, and I get this feeling I can recognize because I meditate so often, of bodily relaxation and satisfaction. Just like my legs have had a massage, or they have soaked in some nice warm water. Sometimes it's like you have a good sleep at night, you wake up in the morning, you're really cozy in your bed, you don't want to get up because it's very, very, very comfortable. That type of delight of a body at ease, you appreciate it, you notice it, and that delight becomes much more apparent. That's just with my legs. And I go up to my butt. I can feel the pressure on my butt. Big body pressing against the cushion. I have to make sure the butt is comfortable. Otherwise there'll be a pain and will disturb the peace of the meditation. Once I feel the butt doesn't need to be moved or adjusted, go up to my waist. I've got a belt on, so it's a bit tight, I'm going to loosen it. I can feel that. It's cutting into my skin a bit. Oh, that's better. And then, once my waist is comfortable, relaxed, go up to my back and give it a stretch. I love that. You see so many animals just stretching their backs. And it makes it, even the kangaroos, I remember seeing their paws on a tree and just balancing on their legs. They just give a big stretch to their back. Dogs are great too, they know how to stretch. And then once you stretch the back, you relax it, let it go. It becomes nice and comfortable. And make sure my shoulders are at ease. One other way of doing that, if you haven't heard me say this before, is I scrunch my shoulders up, make them as tight as possible, really scrunchy, and then let go. They become more at ease than they were to begin with. The whole attitude, once I'm aware of something, I'm kind to it, I let it be. Don't try and get rid of it, which is negativity. I'm at ease with it. Little by little, you learn how to relax so many different parts of your body. I can still feel in my shoulders, my left shoulder, a bit of tightness there. Just focusing on that feeling and ease it. Be kind to it. And I can feel that sensation getting softer. That's what kindness does, it makes things soft. And it relaxes and eases off. I go down my arms. If you've got sore elbows, then please move them. Adjust them. Wrists. Do whatever is necessary so they can be comfortable. And if moving them doesn't work, then just send it kindness. A little bit of joy, a little bit of kindness. And then things open out. And constrictions open, swellings get less. And you find everything becomes soft and natural and at ease. It's the same with your hands. I just ask my hands, how are you? As if they're not my hands, they're somebody else's hands. When I ask, how are you? What can I do to make you more comfortable? That's when I move my hands to find out what they want to be positioned as. Now they're really nice. That's a bit of kindness. And I go back up to my neck. Sometimes you may have some irritation, some bit of allergies, hay fever. That's not too much for me today. But I always make sure my head is well balanced on top of the neck. Otherwise you have neck ache. And I go to the front of my face, making sure that the muscles around my eyes and mouth are at ease. I can feel those muscles and loosen them. How do you loosen them? Try this, try that. And as long as you keep awareness in that place, you soon learn how to produce muscles around the eyes and the mouth which are loose, free, and they feel good. As I said last night, when you loosen those muscles, relax them, at the same time you're relaxing much are the emotional cause of that tension in the front of your face. You're relaxing the fears and the plans and the tiredness. So the muscles in your face become to look like they're from a young person, energized, fresh, positive. And sometimes if you do have lots of things to worry about and think about in life, it works for some, doesn't work for everybody. Imagine just going to that place in my head, right between my ears, but 2 inches behind my eyes, where the brain lives. And my poor brain, like your brain, sometimes gets overused. So I imagine the brain, just a visualization, not real. I imagine my brain was so tired, constantly working. And I imagine just lifting up my skull like it's hinged on one side, opening up the head and taking my poor brain out and putting it into a nice little bed, small bed, because the brain's not that big. Putting it into a nice little bed, a beautiful pillow, very clean sheets and a blanket, and say, brain, you don't need to think now. You can have a rest too. Good night, brain. It is giving the brain permission to be peaceful, and not to worry. And then once you've relaxed all the different parts of your body, some you need to spend more time on, some less time, then I look at the whole body. I feel my whole frame, from the top of the head to the bottom of the toes, sitting here, relaxed to the max. If there's any part which is still needing some attention, still give it this beautiful kindness to let it be, let it relax, opening the door of my awareness to whatever I feel. And that way I feel my body relaxing deeper and deeper. And I feel the delight start to arise. And this is, your body is more relaxed than when you began. And even that amount of relaxation is actually quite pleasant. I also know this is good for my body. It allows healing and health. And when I have joy with a relaxed body, it's the joy which is happening right now. And it keeps me in this moment. So often when I do this, I don't really want to go deeper into the mind, because I'm enjoying this moment. Just being with this body, feeling it, like I'm in the shell. And the shell is really nice, very pleasant, very delightful. I'm not doing anything, I'm just experiencing a relaxed body. And that stays with me. It doesn't disappear, it doesn't change, because it's pleasant. I'm really getting into it now. But there comes a time when the body is just so relaxed, it gets less and less apparent. It's like it starts to disappear. Basically, there's no business to be done there. So I go inside to the peaceometer. How peaceful am I now? I do this. And how do I get myself more peaceful? Present moment awareness, just being now. I've done a lot of work in the past 69 years. I let that go. Too much to carry. And as for the future, it's so obvious to me that now is the only time I have. This is where my future is being made. The more I stay in this present moment, the better I can perform to help you, and to also to be at peace for myself, and to be healthy. It's all built right here, right now. The only time I can do anything about my future, right now. Because the present moment awareness is also delightful. It's not boring at all. Because it's nice being free of the past. It's beautiful not having to worry about the future. It's like you're on holiday. On holiday from work, on holiday from having to do things and remember things and carry things. It's like letting go of all your burdens. Oh, that feels good. Real vacation. emptying the mind from the past and the future, so you can enjoy this present moment. What's it like being now? Can you experience and feel the delight of being free from the past and future? Just like those days you finish work, you have a long holiday. When you go on a retreat and no mobile phone messages. Freedom. That's delightful. Can you feel the delight of a mind in this moment? If you do, then the mind just refuses to wander. Doesn't want to think about anything. Just having fun being here. Which means you get more and more silent. Until you can feel peace. What is peace? Experience like for you? What's it like? How does it feel? It's like you start to just experience peace as your meditation object. And it's gorgeous. After a while you become a connoisseur of peace. What people can't feel or see is very, very clear to you. A sense of peace inside. But don't forget to notice that part of peace called contentment, which is very joyful. You don't want anything, you don't need anything. You don't have to go anywhere. Nothing is missing. You don't have to achieve and work for anything anymore. You just are this peace. And little by little, the mind is content, doesn't need to think, doesn't need to worry, doesn't need to plan. This is gorgeous where you already are. And it might be that you start to be aware of your breathing. But as I've been saying, like it's like watching waves on the beach. On a calm day, those waves come up slowly, gently. When they reach the top, then they just fall back again, naturally. Just watching this gentle movement of air coming into your body and going out again. You don't control it. No more than you can control the waves which belong to the ocean coming up the beach on which you're sitting. How delightful is that? The joy of peace, body at ease. I'm going to be quiet soon. If the mind starts to wander off, then you didn't have enough joy. So go back and develop some joy in this moment. Your body at peace. Mind having nothing to do, nothing to perform. Imagine you are on holiday. No boss. Enjoy the moment. I will now be quiet until a couple of minutes before the end of the meditation. getting close to the end of this meditation period. How do you feel? How much peace is there inside? And how delightful is your peace of mind? How much are you in this moment, the future and the past, not being so important? And how does your body feel? How relaxed are your legs, your butt, your back, your hands and your head? This is so much more relaxed and delightful than when you began. Gong 3 times. To come out from the meditation. Excellent. And thanks for smiling at the end of the meditation. It means it takes the joy from the meditation out there into the world. Excellent. So now, from 4 to 4:15 or so forth, we usually have opportunities for questions about the meditation. Sometimes we have questions from overseas, because it's always live streamed. So, is there any? Yes, we have some questions from overseas. Although it's quite hard sometimes when you've meditated, you come out of meditation, to get the brain working to ask a question. So it's nice having some questions from overseas, first of all. Here we go. Today from France, India, Tokyo and Indonesia. Dear Ajahn, the Simsapa Sutta 56.31 triggers curiosity. What are these things he knew and did not teach? Could it be the cosmos or other realms or completely different things? Thanks. That is a little simile in one of the suttas, because the Buddha held some leaves in his hand and said, which are more, the leaves in my hand or the leaves in this great forest, the Simsapa trees? And he says, obvious, the trees in your hand are just so small compared to the leaves in the forest. So just the same, the Buddha said, what I've taught you, he said to his monks and nuns, what I've taught you compared to what I know is just like the leaves in my hand compared to the leaves in the forest. And people thought when they heard that, wow, there's some secret teachings which the Buddha never told us. What were they? But then the next part is the most important. He said, the reason I haven't taught you these other things I know is because they have nothing to do with the path to freedom, to liberation, to enlightenment. They're just other things, you know. So, you know, what I teach in meditation, I know much more than I teach you. You know just how to mix cement, you know. That's got nothing to do with meditation. So in other words, the reason he didn't teach those other things because they weren't necessary. Just other things which we know about life. And Shonak Guhuroi from India, dear Ajahn, I notice that the dilata get while listening to a talk or meditating fades away while going through daily life, and sometimes the mind gets negative. How to deal with this? One of the things which you can do, which I've taught many times, is that when the mind doesn't have delight, you start getting negative. That's also a sign of tiredness. And when you're negative, you'd find your performance at work goes down, your output goes down, your productivity is not that good. And that is the old simile for those who haven't seen it before. How heavy is the glass of water? And the answer is, the longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. When this starts to get heavy, I don't need to throw it away, I just put it down and rest, relax. When I pick it up again, it actually feels lighter, not because there's less water, but because I've relaxed. So it's the inability of people to take those opportunities for relaxation which causes stress in our modern world, and lower productivity and no innovation. So we ask people at work, whatever you're doing, if you have an opportunity to take a few minutes rest, then grab that, take it. Even if you just go to the toilet. That's why in the United States they call it restroom. Brilliant term. Not to go to the toilet, sit in there and just meditate for 10 minutes. When you finish your visit to the toilet, you go out, you feel refreshed, energized. Which means when you write an email or when you do a report, it's easier to do. When your brain is tired, of course it can't work that well. Imagine just riding a horse, and the horse has been ridden all day. Of course it can't go fast. So what we need to do is learning how to look at our brain like a horse. Feed it nice food, give it some rest. And when you need to make it work, if it feels tired, give it a break, a rest. Then you find that your brain just works really well. Trouble is, we don't know how to rest the brain. We know how to think, and worry about stupid things. So if you're working, learn some good meditation at any time during the day. Go to a quiet place to rest the brain and meditate. And you get delight when listening to a talk, you get delight when meditating. And when that delight starts to fade away, I need to go to the toilet, I need to do this, find a quiet place, and just relax for 10 minutes. But when you do that, make sure you really know how to relax very quickly, very efficiently. So when you go back to work, you find that, you know, you're productive. There's one gentleman once told me that he does 1 minute of silence every hour on the hour at work. He works in an office. And so when it gets to, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, or 3 to 1 o'clock, he closes his eyes and meditates for 1 minute. He says when his boss passes by his desk, he thinks, oh, he must be contemplating the contract or something. He says, I'm not contemplating anything. I'm making my mind very peaceful and still for 1 minute. Because he does that every minute on the hour. So every hour on the hour, just for 1 minute. He says that makes a great deal of difference to his stress levels and his efficiency goes up. And the extra is when you go home to your family, you're not so tired. Oh, I've been working all day. Oh, you wouldn't believe what I have to do today. That's because you never took any rest. So there's many ways you can take rests during the daytime. And that means that you can have a more peaceful, efficient life and have a much better time with your family when you go home. From Tokyo, Although I like meditating, I cannot start meditation when I'm mentally worn out. And I usually spend time online. Are there any tips to gradually set up my mind to meditate? One of the nice ways to set up your mind to meditate is have these guided meditations. Just like when a person learns how to drive a car, they always have a driving instructor sitting next to them, which always gives them advice every minute so they don't cause an accident. And that's why we have these guided meditations. So you choose a guided meditation online, all the ones we do here, all for free. And that does not mean that they're useless, or actually I said it wrong. They're not for free, they're priceless. And priceless means they're good, but you don't have to charge any money. It's something, money and just meditation, truth, they shouldn't really be put together. But anyway, so that means that you can have these things on your iPhone or whatever, and every time you want to meditate, you put them on. So it's very easy for you to do, to start it. And you feel mentally worn out. That's because you don't meditate enough. Have small meditations, 10-minute, 15-minute meditations. So when it's your time to have a break. Okay, I know that sometimes people work and they just, they don't have time for lunch, or they eat the lunch while looking at their computer. But the toilets are a wonderful place, honestly. Because you lock the door there, no one disturbs you in there. And I often tell people, if your boss says, why do you always take 15 minutes to go to the toilet? You say, I'm constipated. And it's not a joke, it's for true, you are mentally constipated. So you go there to loosen your brain. So, and then when you learn how to meditate for short periods, you find you're not so worn out. Which means, you know, you can do meditation. Not just meditation, you can do reports, you can speak to your colleagues, and it's, you know, what you say is not rubbish. So that's actually why meditating is like what Ajahn Chah used to call food for the heart. Like, you know, maybe rice and sushi in Tokyo is food for the body. You need food for the heart as well. You may be physically not worn out, but mentally you are. So give yourself some peace and relaxation. Lastly, from Indonesia. Dear Ajahn, I wonder if meditation can also be practiced by people with pain or disease, since body is often uncomfortable. Of course it can. You just listen to some of the examples I gave last night in the Friday night talk. If I have pain or disease, that's when meditation really comes to the fore. I mean, instead of going to the hospital or something, because, you know, serpentine is a bit of away from the hospital. You know, if there's a problem there that sometimes, I still remember this, a lady came from the from Bentley Hospital. You know, she still had a little band around her. And she said, she's heard me on the psychic plane inviting her to Bodhinyana Monastery. Of course I didn't, so she was a little bit psychotic. Actually, more than a little bit. So we called the psychiatric emergency team. And because she was getting a little bit violent, they had to call the police. And the police came from Bodhinyana Monastery, from Armidale to Bodhinyana Monastery. And they got lost. They took 2 hours. It's the police. I'm glad it wasn't sort of some people trying to take over the monastery or. Sometimes you want to call an ambulance and they get lost. But anyway, it's a long way away. So if there are emergencies, it's nice to have another way of dealing with such very critical trauma. And that's where you meditate. Because it's the mind's reaction to trauma. I don't know, many of you may know this one, but I remember learning this when I was a school teacher, when I was in the teacher training course. We ask. So why can't we have a doctor come and spend a couple of hours with us? It was like she was teaching physics. Because sooner or later somebody is going to put like a piece of metal in the sort of the plugs, you know, the sockets with electricity. And I think they know what they're doing. And they're going to just be playing around and just knock over some acid. You know, in the laboratories are dangerous places. So, you know, we need to know what to do. So they got this old GP, a lovely fellow, and he said, look, he said, I'm not going to do this now, but I did this to other students. He just got a small thimble of blood and threw it on a white sheet and just went everywhere on the right, what, the sheet. He said, it's only a tiny thimble of blood. It's not much at all, but when somebody has a cut and it goes on their clothes, it looks like they've lost every pint of blood in their body. It spreads. And he said, it's only a small thing. And he said, this is what he said, I'm not sure if it's still true, this was from 50 years ago. He said, if you do see somebody who's in an accident and it looks really, really, really gross, arms sort of hanging off and there's blood everywhere, there's burns. He said, the last thing you should ever do is to panic. So, oh my God, that looks terrible. Wow. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but I remember just in Thailand stepping on a nail. It went through my foot. Didn't hurt at all. You know, it must have gone through an acupuncture point or something. I don't know. Well, it's fine. So, you know, you saw the nail poking up from above. But the monk who was with me said, oh, that looks terrible. And as soon as he said that, it started to hurt badly. I told him off afterwards, next time that happens, shut up. But it is true, he said, your reaction. He said, if you see somebody with a terrible wound, please lie to them, he said. He said, just tell them, oh, that's nothing, you'll be okay. You'll be fine. In other words, to stop them overreacting themselves and getting into shock. He said, the shock is one of the reasons, in his opinion, a lot of people die who shouldn't really die. Simply because, you know, when you go into shock, was it your arteries and veins all get smaller, I think. And it means you have all sorts of other problems come, you overreact. So because of that when you meditate and you have a sickness or pains or injuries or something, it's easy. You don't overreact. Then you overreact, the body can often heal itself. So I've used meditation. I told you last night, scrub typhus, that's like typhoid in the middle of a fever, that's pretty heavy stuff. You can meditate, fine. I just, colds, flus, all those sorts of stuff, easy. And what's it called, food poisoning. I don't have that many injuries, I must admit. But anyway, that's how you can, if you have pain or disease, if you learn how to meditate already, it's not that hard to overcome that pain and disease. And that last little story before I become quiet, the time we had the toothache over in first year in Thailand, northeast, there's no telephone, no electricity in the monastery, it's in wilderness areas. There's went to the medicine cabinets, no painkillers in there. There was no aspirin, no Panadol, nothing. So you couldn't take anything, and it was just middle of the night. You had to wait till the morning before you could go anywhere. And so that I tried to meditate. But my meditation, the reason it didn't work, because I was trying to get rid of the pain. And I tried everything, watched my breath, tried to walk in meditation, chanting. But the thing which worked, you do these things, it's stunning. Wow, what happened? Because I couldn't stand the extreme pain of the toothache. I couldn't sleep, couldn't do anything. And just middle of the night, I don't know why it always gets worse in the middle of the night. But anyway, it just really, my jaw was exploding with pain. And then I thought, well, what can I do? Just let it be. And you heard that word many times, very wise, let go, let it be. And then, so you did it, you tried it. And it was absolutely brilliant, it just took a second. As soon as I thought, let go, I did. And the pain, this is no exaggeration, which it was an exaggeration, because it sometimes shocks me just what the mind can do. You just let go. And the pain disappeared, literally just like a silver magic bullet. Boom. There 1 second, the next second, it's gone. And instead it was the blissing out. So much joy. And then loss of energy. And then I just decided it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock or something. I usually get up at 3. So I thought I'd better get an hour's sleep. So I laid down, fell asleep. Amazing if you even fall asleep. Heard the bell ring. When I woke up, I had a toothache. Only a small one. But just the fact that you could actually have any sleep at all, and just by saying that, not just saying letting go, but doing the letting go. And the pain went. You know what that taught me? It taught me not to be afraid. Because you had another way of dealing with quite extreme pain. Let go. Don't fight it. Be a friend. And it stopped. Weird. Anyway, any questions from the floor? Yeah. Because it helped a lot that I'd been meditating already about 5 or 6 years before that happened. So I knew how to just let go. How to just sit there, be with this. Open the door of your heart to this moment. Not fight anything, not expect anything. Just be kind. Amazing things happen. Okie dokie. Yeah, pain or disease. There's also so many stories about people with cancers. They're the interesting ones because these are things you see on the machine. That this guy with cancer at this retreat over in Sydney. Because we all knew he had cancer because when he was meditating, 9-day retreat, he always breathed very loudly. And people complained. They complained to me, Ajahn Brahm, can you please tell people to breathe silently or quietly? I said, look, the fellow's got a big tumor in his sinus passage. He can't breathe through his nose. So for 9 days, many of you know this, it's a gorgeous story. 9 days he was meditating. I don't think he was even a Buddhist before. 9 days meditating, it wasn't working. And the last meditation. It's always the last meditation. That's why it's best to have 2-day retreats or 1-day retreats. So we get to that last day quickly. So anyway, the last day, and getting in the car, going to the airport. You're running towards me. He said, Ajahn Brahm, I've got it. Don't go yet, please. He said, I was meditating in the room, and I heard a popping sound. Whop. And so I could breathe through my nose. He said, but he said it closed up after about a minute. But it actually opened up for 1 minute. And he said, it was amazing. And I said, oh yeah, you know what I usually say, well done, carry on. And I thought he'd left it too late, I'd never see him again. But, and of course you all know what people with cancer, dying of cancer, doctors have given up on him. He's really thin and gaunt, see the bones and hardly any flesh on their body. So about 6 months later, when I was in Sydney, this guy came up to me, do you remember me? I said, no, who the hell are you? And he was very smiley and he said, I was that guy. And he couldn't recognize him because, you know, he'd gone into remission and his body was looking healthy again. He said, I just carried on that method and the whole cancer just disappeared. He said, I'm spending the rest of my life now, I remember him telling me, teaching other people what you taught me. I said, well done. And now there's so many cases like that of people who had cancers who meditated and cancer's gone. So yes, E.D. Tim from Indonesia, meditation can also be practiced by people with pain and disease. Yes, it's brilliant. Okay. So there's enough questions here, so actually no questions from you guys, but they're pretty good questions from overseas, so well done. So now we can pay respects to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then we can do what we need to do. I'm just, after this, going off to Supreme Court Gardens. There's the Buddhist Light International Association are having a little ceremony for Buddha's birthday. So I'm going up there to join in. Put it on the side. Thank you, my good man. See, I've got to put that on the top there.
Yes, not
me. I'm a little bit deceptive.
Catch a few more people yet.
Walked in, so I didn't realise it was still